Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Pagans Tonight Radio Network, the voice of the pagan world. Pagans Tonight is sponsored by Witchschool.com, your anyone, anytime, anywhere magical education.
Hello, and thank you for tuning in today. I'm Michael Greywolf, artist, traveler, all-around geek, witch, and brother initiate of the Unnamed Path.
And I'm Matthew Sidney, songwriter, storyteller, mystic, and an initiate of the Unnamed Path.
And you have tuned in and are listening to Walking the Unnamed Path on this podcast. We discuss the teachings and techniques given to us by the ancestors and laid out by our late founder, Hyperion. We also touch on topics and ideas pertaining to queer pagan men in general. We're glad you've decided to join us today. We have a really fantastic show lined up for you. And if you'd like to get in touch with us, if you'd like to be part of the show, you can always call in at area code 347-308-8222. You can hang out in the chat room, which we'll try to get up and running in just a minute. You can always drop us an email at walkingtheunnamedpath@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at walking_theup. Or you can always get a hold of us on Facebook. Usually it's the best way to get a hold of us. At facebook.com/walkingtheunnamedpath. Now, for today's episode, we're going to be doing... What was that, Matthew?
Call now and speak to one of our live psychics. Just kidding.
Oh, goodness. Well, you know, for today's episode, we're very excited to have two of our brothers join us for a roundtable discussion of the book Two Flutes Playing. And why don't you introduce our brothers, Matthew?
Today we have Dan Toronto and Paul Law, both of whom are initiates of the Unnamed Path. They're going to be joining us, and we're going to do a roundtable discussion about Two Flutes Playing, written by Andrew Raymer. And it is a foundational text, I would say, of the tradition. Those of us who are initiates, those of us who've been through the apprenticeship, it is required reading. And from what I hear, if I remember correctly, when Hyperion read this book, it was one of the inspirations that triggered this journey for him. And just a little background, Andrew Raymer began writing the book in 1980. It was first published in 1997. And the backdrop is the AIDS epidemic. So much of the material is in response to that experience, because that was really current at the time. It was the Reagan era. Most of the material is channeled. Different parts of the book are channeled from different spirits, so there are abrupt changes in tone and in diction. From that standpoint, it can be a little difficult to read. It's kind of free-flowing and stream of consciousness in some places, but it's rich in lore, and there are wonderful exercises in it, and it really outlines an entire spiritual system for gay men. And I guess you could consider it one of the pillars of the Unnamed Path in a certain way. What do you think?
I would have to agree. You know, I definitely do kind of recall hearing somewhere, either on a podcast or just in discussion with our brothers, how this book was pivotal to Hyperion when he was, you know, just getting started, you know, forming our tradition. So
before we get...
But, you know...
What were you going to say?
I think I was going to say the same thing you were. You know, before we get into the meat of the topic, you know, we normally like to do a little catch-up, you know, see how each other's doing. And, you know, it might be fun to bring in our brothers and do a little catch-up too, because, you know, we're scattered all over the place. Our brother Dan is in Portland. Our brother Paul, he's actually north of me, like north of Chicago. And I'm in the heart of Illinois, and you're all the way on the coast of Florida. So
yep.
Probably be a good idea to catch up a little bit. Yep.
Let's start with Dan. Introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about Portlandia.
Well, thanks so much for having me. I do live in the fabulous Portland, Oregon, and things are pretty amazing over here lately. You know, we've been expanding a lot as a city, and to be honest, there's been a lot more gay folks and queer folks coming into Portland. It's been really refreshing to see that. I'm one of the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence here. I'm the prioress at this point, so kind of the acting president. So, yeah, that's been really fun to host a lot of events and really invite a lot of new folks. We got a lot of people up from the California area and down from Seattle. So, yeah, it's been really good. We've had you know, great weather here. If you're going to visit the Pacific Northwest, obviously the summer's a great time, and been enjoying that and building a deck, having barbecues, and it's just been a really good summer for me so far.
Now, Paul, tell us a little bit about your neck of the woods.
It's starting to feel a little bit more like autumn here. I'm incredibly busy, and I don't live in a metropolis like or in a highly urban area. I'm actually living between Chicago and Milwaukee, and I kind of enjoy that. I feel like I have a bit more connection to the land. And my husband and I are in the process of actually buying a small home and small lot, and we're really excited about that. Yeah, it's a daunting prospect because you've got to go through all that paperwork and everything. And let's see. Plus, I am also a trustee with my township, so I'm busy there. And I have one full-time job and a part-time job. And I'm also on the board for the township food pantry, and I'm active in local politics and...
You're an overachiever. You caught my disease.
Yes, exactly. I feel like I'm Tayarte. I'm just going everywhere. I'm all over the place.
Now, Michael, how have you been?
Oh, I have been exhausted. this whole week, I've been going into work at 2 a.m., and I actually pulled a double 2 days this week. So I'm fairly worn out, and not in the way I wish I was. And starting to maybe panic a little bit because I'm like, oh my gosh, I have just a little over a month before I'm going to be back in Texas, and I still have to figure out how I'm getting all my crap back to Texas.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
But
other
than that, it should be okay. I mean, I'm looking forward to Between the Worlds in a couple of weeks. So.
Fun. Cool.
Well,
what about you, Matthew?
Things have been wet here. We've had rain every day, a lot of tropical monsoon weather, but I love it. I love the thunderstorms, and so I'm totally good with it. And the only thing, I've been doing a lot of walks. I think you guys on Facebook have probably noticed I post pictures from my walks. I try to take a walk every morning, every evening, and it's for my health because I'm trying to get into better shape. And also, it's part of my spiritual practice. It's my way of connecting with the land and connecting with the energies around me. So, and taking pictures motivates me to pay close attention to what flowers are in bloom and what's happening with the gradually changing seasons. So that's been a part of my practice recently, and it's been a lot of fun, and I've been learning a lot and starting to communicate with some of the animals around here. There's a toad that I've been seeing lately. I think it's the same toad, so that's kind of cool. And then other than that, there's the day job and doing music and doing writing and having a full plate. I feel Paul's pain. So back to Two Flutes Playing by Andrew Rehmer. I wanted to pick out a couple notes from the book. The backdrop of the book is, of course, the AIDS epidemic. And the channeled material in the book suggests that there's a spiritual component, that the AIDS epidemic wasn't just a random occurrence. It wasn't a CIA conspiracy. It happened for a spiritual reason. It is part of the historical events that are happening now that are meant to transform human consciousness. And Andrew Rehmer, or whichever spirit was coming through him at that part of the book, illustrates a two-pronged reason for AIDS happening. On one hand, there's the theory that every illness has a spiritual cause, and the book suggests that AIDS takes root in the body when someone has been made to feel that they do not belong, which, of course, is a common problem for many of our tribe. But on another level, the people who suffered from the disease on a high level agreed to do so in order to assist with that reawakening. So I find that really interesting because I do think that there has been an awakening. There's so much more awareness nowadays. We can get married, for instance, and we're major corporations have diversity and inclusion. So I guess that's kind of the silver lining. And I just think it's a really, really interesting angle.
Well, I think that to a certain extent, the AIDS crisis sort of put, you know, gay culture on the map, in a sense. You know, I mean, it was an epidemic. It was, you know, Reagan was not because he wanted to, but was essentially forced to talk about it because it was affecting so many people. But what I also like about the book a little bit is it also gives kind of a mythology or, I guess, an alternative story to where gay culture started. I mean, most people think about Stonewall riots and then, you know, the AIDS crisis, but he also talks about, and I'm sure we'll get into this more, just that we're a tribe, that there was this tribe of all gay men, and that, you know, cultures back in the Ice Age, even if you goes really far back, you know, like, you know, BC time, about how it was about giving your children who were queer over to the gay tribe. And I really took to that and really, I mean, we'll get into it more, but that was a piece that I'd never really thought about before, is what was our culture originally about?
Yeah. And that ties in with the work that we do with the Unnamed Path, because we build relationships with the ancestors of men who love men, and they provide us with information and teachings and from all different time periods, but some of it probably does date back to this, what is it, I guess, Neolithic Ice Age time period.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
One thing, and one more point that I thought was interesting, and it ties in with that, is the idea that human beings during the Ice Age were on a better path spiritually, that people were more joyful, that people were more connected spiritually, people were more authentic. And he makes it sound, I read the passage today it made it sound like a lot of that had to do with because how hard it was to survive, that there wasn't time or energy for the BS that bogs us down now. Nature had the upper hand. Nature could have wiped us out at any minute. And now it's the other way around. Human activities are the biggest threat to biodiversity on the planet. And he even suggests that the awakening of queer people to their spiritual role is important in helping to steer the human race in a more sustainable direction.
I would definitely agree with that. I mean, I feel like, and they talk about this in the book a bit too, about these different tribes, and that each one was kind of centered around almost a different trade, you know, like weavers or artists or drummers or, you know, healers. And that's definitely resonated through the Unnamed Path for me, is really reconnecting and seeing those in our, you know, four different quadrants we work in. And I think that, you know, that is part of what we bring that's unique, is, you know, this healing energy. You see it in a lot of the professions that, you know, queer men gravitate towards, the arts.
Yeah.
You know, you're a storyteller and a musician. I was a drummer for, and still am, for many years. A lot of folks are very aesthetically charged, you know, got interior decorators, cliched hair stylists. I mean, it's just, it's all in there. And I just, it really broke my brain a little bit to think that, were these energies part of our original tribe making, you know? And he does suggest that in the book.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that, this is Paul, I think one of the things that I'm sort of feeling is that the pendulum is moving back the other direction, where he describes society as having gone from a nomadic culture to a more settled culture, and now we're becoming more nomadic again. We move around. We move, change cities. Michael just mentioned, you know, he's getting ready to move to Texas. You know, we don't always stay in the place where we were born. I grew up in the South, and I've lived in, goodness, I don't remember how many places. So I think we're going back to being more mobile and more nomadic. And I think that's time for us to be rising up to help our culture at this time.
Yeah, that's a really interesting angle. I didn't even think about that, but you're right. I remember now he does mention that in the book. And our society is definitely going in that direction.
Yeah.
So I want to share a little bit with our listeners a couple pieces from the book. And what I'm about to read is from the chapter called Opening Old Gates. I will tell you of another time, another way, of a great civilization to which all of you are heirs. A civilization, however, that left few remains. Here a knife, there a picture, here a bone carved, there a cave discovered. A cold, distant civilization. One that hovered on the edge of Europe's ice age, when half the continent still slept beneath its glaciers, when one could still move easily from Europe to Africa. I will tell you of that time and place. For all your dreams of perfection, of classical Greece, eternal Egypt, your balmy, white-robed Atlantis dreams, and your inscrutable sense of what that happiness and fullness and freedom are real and can exist in a world of chaotic changes, those ideas are memories of that distant place. And you turn the cloaks of fur to silks, the heavy boots to sandals, You call the feeling of inner warmth by its outer face, but each time one of you stops and sighs and says, why does it have to be this way? The memory of the Ice Age has stirred you. The mind is about to remember. So I just love that passage because I am an Atlantis freak, and the idea that the Atlantis legend is a reinterpretation and whispered down the lane version of what happened at the end of the Ice Age and the rising of the oceans is, I think it's plausible, and and Andrew Raymer kind of illustrates this nomadic Ice Age culture that's rich in art and storytelling and love. Is just I read that passage. I was rereading it the other day and I started crying. It just evokes all this emotion, and I felt like an idiot at work hiding in my cubicle.
Well, I think this passage really highlights again for me the importance that our queer culture didn't just start with the Stonewall riots, right? That there could be more, that our origin story started a long time ago. And I think that as, you know, men who love men, as, you know, shamans, it's really key to connect in to not just what pop culture's view of the gay world is. And I think that this book really does that for me. Some people have a hard time getting into it, you know, if you have this sort of scientific mind, or if it's hard for you to really, you know, kind of dream or envision, because some of the stuff he talks about feels really out there, but if you can kind of see it as a mythology, it can really take you to some pretty far places. I mean, just in my working with, you know, men who have passed on, there's definitely threads that go way further back than Stonewall.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Very definitely.
Paul, do you have any thoughts about the Ice Age?
Well, I think I kind of touched on it. I think we're coming full circle now, and we're coming back to that age of being nomadic, and I'm not sure how the ice fits in here. I remember when I just, because I've been rereading this myself, and I remember it talking about that during this time that he's talking about, that the children knew the stories of their tribes and could recite for hours and hours, memorized, you know, songs and poems and, you know, we can't do that anymore. I can barely remember a phone number without looking up.
Right.
So maybe our brains are frozen in our technology.
Well, it's true. Think about our ancestors for tens of thousands of years weren't using writing. Every tradition was an oral tradition, so they were exercising those muscles to memorize long stories and poems and songs, rituals. And for us, we have to use our brains to amortize loans and negotiate freeway traffic and all the minutiae of what's happening on Game of Thrones.
Right.
So we don't, you know, we're using our brain capacity differently, and we have lost that ability to memorize it. It is a struggle. It's something I struggle with. And even as a musician, I have a hard time remembering all the chord progressions to the songs that I sing. And it's frustrating. You know, I beat myself, what the heck's wrong with my brain? You know, it's technology's fault. So another part that was really evocative to me is this next passage was channeled by an ancestor who calls himself Yamati. And he introduces this Neolithic queer mythology and lore that Andrew Raymer touches on in the book. My name is Yamati. I was born in a village in what is now the south of France. In a year you would call 9098 BC, my parents were of the tribe of artisans, craftspeople. As the bird flies, my mother used to say, so do we weave. We had fisher tribes, healing tribes, storytelling tribes, clothing-making tribes. We had people who raised children and people who didn't. We had priestess and priest clans. We had many tribes of gay people. The tribe of your birth was seldom the tribe of your adulthood. Tayarti, who lived long before my time, was the greatest saint of the gay tribes. He was our Christ, our Buddha, our benefactor, and our channel spirit. Men have loved men since the beginning of time, but it was Tayarti who first would gather other gay men to teach and to chant, for he saw that in his time a new healing was needed, and he saw that the power of that healing had existed all along in the love, in the mate bonds, in the sharing that exists between two men. To me, that is the seed of the unnamed path. So much right there. It's touching on our unique capacity to love as men who love men, and our existence as not just a subculture, not just a social phenomenon, but as a spiritual tribe, a natural tribe grouping that is an essential piece in the mosaic of humanity's existence as a social and complex species. What were your guys' reaction when you first read that part of the book?
This was definitely the braingasm for me for the whole book. And I totally agree with you that this is really a core piece of why The Unnamed Path is so important to me, is that it's about community, right? It's about reclaiming our gifts. It's about owning that that there's something unique that happens when two men make love. That's powerful, that's magical and unique. And I kind of got my first taste of paganism through Alexandrian Wiccan Coven. And I just found more and more through that process that I couldn't see myself in its mythology and lore, this kind of procreation kind of cycle. And obviously, I mean, I love nature. I love the cycles of the seasons, but I couldn't see myself in it, and The Unnamed Path really helped me feel at home, and this book did that as well, and just kind of honoring us that we have these unique gifts, and we live in a culture and a time that is trying to ignore us or cheapen, you know, what we have to offer to society. We're just pretty, you know, like beautiful young boys, you know, that just don't give a fuck about anything, you know, and this is totally talking about something more deep and rich, you know, that we could be shamans or healers or, you know, of service for the community. And so this passage really, really captures that for me.
I love the way you framed that how our media culture cheapens Mm-hmm. Identity cheapens what we have to offer. Because that's something that has always bothered me long before I discovered Unnamed Path. I always felt that we as gay men have something so magical and profound
mm-hmm.
that we offer, that we give. And that's pushed into the background in our culture, I guess, because you can't commoditize it.
Right, exactly.
You know, you can't slap, a Coca-Cola banner on it, sponsored
right.
by Wells Fargo.
Exactly.
And I think it hurts us because
mm-hmm.
I feel that so many of us feel that we have more to offer, but our society
mm-hmm.
is telling us, no, you're just there to police the fashion and make things
mm-hmm.
look pretty on a superficial
exactly.
level. And that's really about it. And, and you can make people laugh. That's a good thing. You're there for
and have 100 partners, right?
Yeah.
Or whatever. Yeah just be sex
yeah.
machines or whatever. It's pathetic. Yeah, there's way more richness of culture here. And that's what I think this book really brings overall, is a revisioning of where we come from.
Yeah. Yeah.
And who we are.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I mean, that's, this is Paul. Like I mentioned, I'm active in my community.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean I just like go to board meetings and just sit there. I mean, I'm like active in my board, and I actually get to the board meetings early so I can look over the bills and make sure that when I approve them and say, yes, we should pay these, I know what I'm talking about. I actually care about the community and care about the people and the land within which we're responsible for. And the food pantry that I'm involved with, I care about
mm-hmm.
the people that we serve and wanting to make sure that we have the available resources to take care of the people that are in need and that we're there for them in whatever way that they do need, whether it be right now between the food pantry and the township office. They're collecting school supplies because the children are going out to school. And I think we're also talking about maybe adopting some classrooms and seeing if we can't help with helping teachers provide supplies for their classrooms, because a lot of teachers have to provide their own supplies. And
mm-hmm.
if we can
yeah.
adopt some classrooms,
yeah.
then we can help further children's learning and growth and better our community. So, I'm just really, it's like I'm digging into the dirt and I'm just like cultivating it and massaging it. And so
that's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that I'm remembering just now is in years past, long before I discovered Unnamed Path, on more than one occasion, I've had encounters with, I think in both these situations, it was with older straight women who did recognize something special about us. And
mm-hmm.
one woman in particular said, and gosh, I wish I could remember her name, but she said that in her experience, she views men who love men, gay men, in her terminology, as angels.
Hmm.
Because that's her experience. That's what she sees in our people. And I think someone else made the comment that she observed that we possess a deep capacity for compassion a unique capacity for compassion that is tremendously needed in this world. And looking back, I think that it's amazing that there are other people, there have been other people outside of our community who recognize our capacity to love, who recognize our capacity to be healers, and who are rooting for us and hoping that we see that in ourselves, right? Because so many of us, it's hard to be that when you're not seeing that in yourself, or we're being that and doing that for other people, and maybe it's subconscious and we're still beating ourselves down because, you know, oh, because I don't have a six pack, or oh, because, you know, I every time I eat, I stain my clothes and I can't compete with the fashionistas. But of course, that's not what we're here to be.
Yeah, I'm comfortable in my skin and being able to say, hey, pass me the seconds or the thirds or I'm neither skinny or fat. I'm very much in between. Part of it's my body just doesn't want to put on much weight, and some of that I guess I should mention this since we made comments about the AIDS crisis and everything. You know, I am HIV positive, and one of the first therapies that I was on had AZT as a component, and one of the side effects that it had for me was it caused me to lose a lot of the, literally it killed the fat cells in my extremities. So I find it very difficult to put on weight. I have to be very comfortable in my own skin and go, you know, I'm not going to be able to like bulk up and be all, you know, He-Man, you know, big muscly, whatever. I'm who I am. And I try to tell other people, you are who you are. Be who you are. Be comfortable in your skin. You mentioned earlier about how I forget how you put it, but it was I'm having a brain fart now. And you mentioned
in
the green room. my husband, who is also HIV positive and has been since the beginning, since like 1980. You know, he's like one of the really early, you know, long-term survivors. He's on disability, but he works part-time as a caregiver. And, you know, he takes care of, he's actually had some people that he's taken care of that are terminal. Other people he takes care of that are in situations where they're just not able to take care of some of their physical needs, such as, you know, washing clothes or doing dishes and, you know, taking care of their housekeeping, whatever. You know, so he does that part time, you know, helping other people. So that's kind of where he is. Yeah, we sort of fit together in various ways, but both of us work as a caring partnership in our community.
Wow. That's so important. That's, I think, what we're here to do.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go to one of our favorite subjects. I really like what Andrew Raymer says about sex. And he writes, and again, this is channeled material, and it's not always clear who the speaker is, but he writes, "For too long, love has been denied to men together. Love, tenderness, caring, For too long, the love between men has been unspoken, and only the outer form, the dance of sex, has remained. Sex is sex when only bodies dance it. When the heart joins in, then sex is sacred. Sex made holy is that through which two can channel love out to the world. How delicious.
Yeah, very much so. Again, a very different procreation myth, right? Stepping away from it's only about men and women and their sex and making children. That our sex could be sacred. And you see that this is also kind of something that's coming out in our culture, right? As we're allowed to be, to some degree, at the table in our culture. I've seen a lot of relaxing of, straight men and their ability to hug each other, connect, we're bros, we like each other, this whole bro job kind of situation. It's almost a trickle down of that. As we become more powerful in our self-expression and being okay with holding hands in public or, sharing our love and gifts, it allows all of male culture to relax.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think for me, this passage is affirming because I'm very empathic. So it's very difficult for me to have sex that isn't spiritual, because when I'm that physically intimate with someone, I feel them under my skin and vice versa. And
totally.
I deleted Grindr and the other apps from my phone because in my area, I don't know what it's like in other areas, but it seemed like there were just so many people who just wanted to do crystal meth and have sex parties, and they needed that in order to have a sexually fulfilling experience, or at the other end of the spectrum, just the anonymous hookup. Not that there's anything wrong with it. I've had beautiful one-night stands, magical one-night stands, but
totally.
I find that the pressure and the challenge of the expectation and the challenge of you can meet someone online and then you get together with them in person and they're very good looking and very hot, but I just get the heebie-jeebies from their aura.
Well, because this is part of the seedy underbelly that we don't like to talk about gay culture, which is avoidance through sex, right?
Yeah.
Sex and intimacy are not the same thing. Some people treat it like a sport, like a hobby.
Yep.
And that's great. I mean, some people that really works for them. But I think maybe what you're describing, Matthew, is some of us can't do that. I can't really use sex as an avoidance tool like that. I feel the same way. I really need a deep heart connection, and I see it as a energy exchange, on a spiritual level. And I'm very particular about who I would do that with. And so I've actually, to be honest, never installed an app on my phone for that exact reason.
Wow.
I don't think that that I need to mingle my energies that way to be validated. But on a side note, it's funny. My husband and I actually, this is a fun little story. We met on this ancient engine called Craigslist. And he put out an ad for gay sex magic. And that's really what we're talking about right now, right? Is conscientiously using that sexual energy as a cone of power or as a way to build energy for a spell or for the greater work of the community. And I think that's a very valid form of magical work. And, the name PASS is, very sex positive, body positive, and, that's definitely a tool that you can use for energy healing for sure, for your partner, yourself, and for the greater community.
Yeah, and I think that's something that one of the many things that we have to offer the mainstream gay community, because it doesn't seem to really be cool to have sacred sex or to talk about sex in a sacred way or in an energetic
mm-hmm.
way. It's turning around. There's more of that,
mm-hmm.
which is exciting to see, but I think we certainly have a ways to go.
Well, because it requires vulnerability on a deep level. You know, we've touched on a little bit, you know, our culture is, gay culture is constantly under attack right now, now that it is in the spotlight, and it's being cheapened. And it's really hard to fight a lot of those messages, you know, and find body positivity and self-love, you know. And if you're battling on that on an internal level, it's hard to add another person into that mix, you know, and add your energies together to do something greater. And I think that's what I'll speak for myself. I'm constantly working on that, you know, is finding self-love and self-care. And, you know, we've talked about it, you know, with Paul's story too, of we're very good at doing things for the community, you know, and caring about the community. But are we doing that for ourselves too? It's a fine balance.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Touché. And I say that because, and I'm glad we're having this conversation, because for so long I felt that I was weird. I felt that there was something wrong with me.
Like, why can't I just fuck 1,000 people?
Exactly. And then I've experienced this peer pressure that, oh, well,
mm-hmm.
you've got to prove yourself. And
mm-hmm.
in the past, there are times where I've had sex that I did not want to have.
Mm-hmm.
But because I felt I was putting pressure on myself to prove a point, you know, oh, you know, I'm a gay man, and you know, I should, you know, my buddy over here, he has 3 hookups a day. You know, why can't I? I got to catch up. You know,
right.
If not, then something's wrong with me. And
yep.
And now that I'm more mature and more spiritually aware, I can recognize that wasn't serving me.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's okay, not only okay, but necessary to honor my perspective, and that it's important for me to do so, and that I don't need to compare myself to, you know, the guy, you know, my wingman at the club or whatever. And
totally.
And I think to an extent I'm still going through that. I mean, to be honest, it's still.
Oh, me too.
You know. Yeah. Have that, you know, internalized peer pressure, I guess you could call it.
Mm-hmm. Well, we all want to fit in, right? We've been othered
yeah.
so many times in our lives and so many different arenas that we're handed this script, right? This is what it is to be a gay man, right? Have a lot of sex, you know, work out all the time. Be an overachiever. And
yeah.
you got to fight against that. I mean, every community has to do that work. It's just different for each community, you know. And it takes a lot of strength to fight against those active messages and to honor our real truth, which is
yeah.
maybe we don't fit in, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
Maybe that's the uniqueness that makes us who we are and beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah.
And maybe we're the ones that are being real and everyone else is.
Uh-huh.
Is trying to be something that they're not.
Uh-huh. Potentially.
Yeah. Potentially. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, Paul, and to your point, I think in a way we're pioneers. We're pioneers in re-enchanting the mundane. We're pioneers in the healing of humanity in general and of our gay brothers, our gay tribe in particular, because it's uncharted territory. You know, for all the years, all the decades, the centuries that our love has been denied, surreptitious hookups were the norm. That was
mm-hmm.
how you coped. You know, it's not
mm-hmm.
just, it wasn't just the 70s, it wasn't just the 60s, it wasn't just the 50s. There were gay men having quickies and behind the church in the Middle Ages. And that was, you know, hurry up, get it done before the vicar comes by. And
mm-hmm.
assuming it wasn't the vicar that you were with.
Hey-o! Right? Let's tell the story the way it actually happened. Oh.
Exactly.
So I think we've inherited this cheapening of our sexuality and the de-enchantment
uh-huh.
of it. And, you know, part of our wonderful path, our mission is to explore that in our own lives. And maybe in doing that, we get to set a little bit of an example for the rest of our community.
Yeah. I think that's one of the exciting things. And I'm bringing this more into a mundane down to earth level. I think it's one of the things that's really exciting for myself and my husband, Chris,
uh-huh.
About us buying a house, because here we're going to be living, you know, we won't have the white picket fence because it's just not going to fit the way our yard looks. But we've been talking about how we want to landscape the yard and, you know, how we want to do the house and everything, and, you know, what great neighborhood this is. And I think we're both eager to get out and meet our neighbors once we get there. And so, you know, just being there and being able to say, I'm okay with who I am. And I invite you to be okay with that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And invite you to be okay with who you are.
Right. Right. Which I think we have. We've done a great job of opening the way for openness. There are polyamorous relationships that are now out of the closet, and people are more comfortable being open about if they're in a triad, for instance. And all of these myriad ways of loving are at least being talked about. Maybe not everyone accepts it, but at least now it can be talked about, and at least people can live more authentically than they've been allowed to live under the last 1,500 years or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I did want to touch on the pantheon, if you will, that Andrew Raymer, or the spirits he was channeling, outline, and it's slightly different than our pantheon and our tradition. Two Flutes Playing speaks of Father Earth, and there's a beautiful passage about him. Every blade of grass, every bush, every tree is another cock of Father Earth's body. When you eat, you are eating his body. Always feel like this. Swallow his holy body and make it a part of your own. And I just love that.
Yum.
So exactly.
Yummy.
it's
putting on those lenses, like, that this world could be for us, right? Like, we live in this straight world, right, where it's all about procreation and Mother Earth, and, you know, she is the womb we all come from, which is true. Like, I'm not saying that that's not a beautiful mythology, but
again, this whole nother lens these glasses just put on, that this could be a gay world, right? This could be all about men who love men, right? That each blade of grass a cock. I just love that. Like, you know, that mountains, those aren't bosoms, those are dicks to suck, right? Like, it's just, it's beautiful. I just, yeah, I love it.
It's delicious and empowering, and at least in my journey, this passage does resonate with the way I experience the dark god.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Sensuality, sexuality, the experience, the raw nature, our animal nature, and having that reflected back in nature.
Yeah.
I totally agree. I was sitting here thinking the same thing, and then Matthew got there first.
Well, I think so,
sometimes Matthew and I are like two halves of one brain. Of course, we were both in the same initiate class, so sometimes we do that.
Boom.
Oh my gosh.
Psychic powers on high.
Just one mind, multiple terminals. And then there's a beautiful passage about Father Earth's complement, Mother Sky.
Mm-hmm.
When you make love, two men together, two flute players, when you enter into the darkness from which all things come, you are as close to her as you ever can get, birthing newness as she birthed the myriad children that are stars and worlds.
Hashtag dark goddess.
Yep.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right? That's the singularity, the Big Bang, and all the stars. That's all of
them.
Kaboom. Yeah,
and
exactly.
This inspires me because I haven't done all the exercises that are in this book, and I keep saying to myself, I want to go back and do that. I want to go back and do the different exercises. And I think maybe now is the time to really do that, to really experience the book. I mean, I read the book, studied it, but to actually taste it and live it and see what that feels like.
Well, some of the exercises, actually, I think most of the exercises are partner exercises, if I remember correct.
Most of them are, I think.
A lot were, yeah.
A lot of them are.
Yeah.
So I'll reload Grindr and I'll have to craft my profile in a way.
No, it's about Craigslist, okay? You need to get a Craigslist ad out there for gay sex magic. Ask for what you want, hunty.
Wasn't that in the Ice Age?
The first computer rose up out of the cracking ice. Craigslist was formed, where all your magic is acquired.
Oh my goodness. My goodness.
See, well, I would say to our listeners, anyone who wants to develop more intimacy, try the exercises in this book, because if you do these exercises with your partner, there is going to be intimacy.
Mm-hmm. Deep soul gazing.
It's
going to
happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, very much. Yeah, one of the things that I found about the book, because some of the sections are hard to comprehend just reading it, it was very, what is it I'm looking for? Very opening to hear the passages, and they have the book on Audible. So I have it loaded on my phone. I listen to it periodically over and over and over again. And I keep finding new things in the book, and I go, oh, wow, I didn't hear it that way the first time. Because a lot of it is metaphor and poetry and, like you said, stream of consciousness, and it's just, sometimes it just doesn't make sense just reading it off a flat page. But hearing someone speak it, all of a sudden the words come to life for me. So,
and you know,
that's just my two cents.
And Paul, I think you're right. In a lot of ways, the book is very right-brained.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it makes sense if you consider that the ancestors who are being channeled in the writing of this book are coming from a pre-literate civilization, an oral tradition.
Right.
And an oral tradition is not going to be literal, logical, right-brained. And so it's challenging, I think, to read a book from a left-brained perspective because our logic centers want it to be logical.
Mm-hmm.
But hearing it, you can just experience it and feel the vibration of the words in your body and experience it the way people would sitting around a campfire with Tyarki chanting the words rather than reading them in a paperback.
Exactly.
So there's one last passage that I wanted to share with our listeners, and this is towards the end of the book, and it's about elders. And it says, in recent history, there has been no one to tell us the stories of our people.
Mm-hmm.
We had no elders, no grandfathers who could tell us who we are, why we are, or where we come from. Without our elders, we could not walk the earth in a grounded, healing way. But now, we are becoming elders. And I feel that.
Mm-hmm.
That rings so true for me.
said the youngster.
Is that why I like older guys?
That could be. Well, you're not necessarily that young. I tease you because I'm like at least 20 years older than you.
I'm very honest about my age. I'm 43.
Oh, you're older than I thought. Okay.
Yeah. And I guess I look a little bit younger. That was from too much clean living in my 20s. I was vegetarian and lots of yoga and all that until I became corrupt and debauched in my 30s.
I love
one thing
passage. Oh, go for it.
No, go ahead.
I like this passage because I don't know that every queer person has really thought about this, but what makes us unique is that we hold two different lineages, right? We have our lineage of blood, right, where we came from, our family of origin, and then we have this queer culture and mythology, right? And that is sometimes hard to balance. You know, many of us come out of
our family of origin feeling really wounded, really hurt. And it's easy then to want to say, fuck the past, fuck the people that I came from. They don't represent me. And this book kind of gives you this new perspective, like, whoa, but I've got this whole other tribe over here, this whole other lineage that I could tap into, you know?
Yeah.
And I could feel honored. I could feel represented. And that there's magic and wisdom here. And sometimes it's hard to balance both. You know, it's easy to simplify, again, our history as Stonewall riots, AIDS crisis, right? Like, those are these big points. But there's way more. Like, going further back, I mean, one of the powerful tools that, you know, initiation gives you is, you know, this special spirit guide, when you become initiated. And, you know, that can be from any generation, any time. Like, mine is, you know, 15, 1600s. And it's interesting to tap into that other tribal line and see what wisdom's there.
And I consider myself very blessed. I was outed / came out in high school. And fortunately, I did live in a relatively gay-positive, gay-friendly area.
Mm-hmm.
This is the Fort Lauderdale, Broward County area of South Florida. And all 4 years of high school, I had one particular teacher, Scott Gillen, was amazing. He was gay, and he introduced me to our culture, our heritage.
Mm-hmm.
He introduced me to James Baldwin. He gave me a copy of The Lost Language of Cranes by David Levitt.
Mm-hmm.
We studied in class a separate piece by John Knowles. And so as a teenager, I was introduced to our pre-Stonewall heritage.
Mm-hmm.
And so as I was coming out and as I was engaging, becoming a part of the gay community, I had this awareness. I knew the story of David and Jonathan. I knew about Alexander the Great and Hephaestion. And so in this passage, it talks about we don't have elders. I'm so grateful that I did have an elder.
Nice.
And being a messed up teenager, like any other messed up teenager, I didn't appreciate that until I was much older. And unfortunately, when I was much older, this wonderful teacher, he had already passed away. He had AIDS and he had passed away, but I honor him among my ancestors. When I do my ancestor work, I connect with him, and I'm very blessed in that way. And so I always try to, when I have the opportunity, to share some of this information, some of this culture with young people. And I've always been comfortable talking to older men. So if I go to a bar or a nightclub, I will happily talk to someone 20, 30, 40 years older than me and learn from their experience, because that's important. And
mm-hmm.
and you know, and hey, a hot daddy is a hot daddy. I think some young people miss out on that. So
mm-hmm.
I would encourage anyone, if you have the opportunity, talk to people who have this rich experience. It doesn't have to be about sex. You don't have to be attracted to them. You don't have to go to bed with them. If they're willing to talk and share their stories, listen, because that person's not going to be around forever.
Uh-huh.
So seize the opportunity. I've talked to people who lived through Stonewall. I've talked to people who know what it was like before Stonewall, who knew what it was like when you were in a gay bar and you had someone watching for the police, because if the police
yep.
came by, you would have to switch partners and grab one of the lesbians and dance with her so that you wouldn't get arrested.
Uh-huh.
Most
yep.
of the kids today have no idea.
Yep. One of my favorite moments, I just recently got married last year to my husband, and we were in our honeymoon, and they had this little Dorothy meeting on this cruise we were on, and the sweet couple, Bill and Doug, I will always remember them. They were in their mid-70s, and they were just the cutest couple ever, and we just had these great stories every night when we would go to this meeting about what you're just talking about them, you know, being from Canada and going to the gay bars in San Francisco in the 60s. And if they got caught, they would be deported. Like, it was a huge deal. And it was just such an eye opener that just, you know, 60, 70 years ago, like, you know,
yeah.
us loving was criminal, you know?
Yeah.
And just, you're right, Matthew, it's so important to connect with our elders and get a proper perspective of all the privilege that we have.
Definitely. So it's so easy to lose sight of that past, and forget about where we've been, because we're so busy with where we are and trying to figure out where we're going.
Right. Right. And our culture isn't just what's happening now.
Right.
RuPaul's Drag Race is fun, but there's a historical reason why RuPaul's Drag Race is important.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's not just entertainment. It's freedom, and that freedom was hard won. The work of the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. I'm sometimes shocked when I talk to someone and I mention them, and they're, oh, well, I've never heard of them. Tell me about them. I'm like, what? You haven't heard of them?
Oh, yeah. There's a whole young generation that doesn't know. Yeah, Radical Fairies, too, right? Like,
yeah.
There's so many wisdom groups out there that are doing great things and holding some of the secrets of our culture.
Yeah. And it's not being taught in schools. And I'm not sure if it's even in university. I don't think they're real. I don't know if a queer studies course in the universities today, if they really get deep into our culture. Maybe they do, but it seems to me that so much of our history is still an oral tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way that
oral.
Gets passed, the only way that gets passed on is by telling the stories, sitting down and talking to each other and sharing that information.
Yes.
So before we tie up the show, I just wanted to know if you guys had any additional thoughts or feelings about Two Flutes playing.
Read it.
And if you've already read it, reread it.
I keep
getting more out of it.
Yeah, I definitely think it's one of those rereaders, you know, like, I definitely remember having to reread a couple chapters because it was so dense, and that's not a bad thing, you know?
Yeah.
Paul said, it really takes time to synthesize this thing, you know, and really get everything that it's trying to offer. And it can feel kind of odd at times. I think we have pointed out that it's very much a right-brain book. It's really it's not your straightforward, you know, psychology book, like, oh, this makes sense because this plus this plus this, it's vast,
Yeah.
Yes. And
yeah.
And you just made a point. And if you have trouble with getting it through, try listening to it.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a good tip.
Yeah, I've heard that from a couple people that they couldn't really click with the book until they digested it via Audible. I know for me, I couldn't read it from beginning to end. I had to read it in a nonlinear way, so I skipped mm-hmm. around. But Oscar Wilde used to read all of his books that way. One of our ancestors, by the way, Oscar Wilde.
Mm-hmm.
For
true.
Listeners who may not know, he called it skipping.
Mm-hmm.
And the way he would read books is he would read chapter 15 and then chapter 4 and then chapter 3 and then chapter 49. And that was the way I had to read Two Flutes Playing, because starting at the beginning, going to the end just wasn't working for me. But that's another strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
I want to thank you guys so much for coming on. And
yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, this was a great conversation. This is a deep conversation. And I want to thank our listeners also for tuning in. And Michael, is there any good music
yeah,
that you can play us out with?
Oh, let me see. That was the button. let's see.
It sounded.
I was actually thinking what song would be good to play, and I think I know a good one. You know, we've played it before, but it's such a good song.
Okay.
If I can bring it up. Okay, here we go. This is We Are the Gods by Spiral Rhythm.
Okay.
We are
the
gods
of
the pagan folk. We are the gods of the pagan folk. We are the the great Osiris, the Lord of the dead, the holy and oak King James the Seer.
That again was Fire Rhythm, We Are the Gods. Thank you again to Matthew for such an amazing show. I'm sorry, everyone, that I wasn't really on the show. Like I said earlier, I'm rather exhausted. And thank you, Dan and Paul, for being on the show as well. It's such a pleasure when our brothers join us for the show. And if you have any comments or suggestions, please shoot us an email at walkingtheunnamedpath@gmail.com. You can also hit us on Facebook at facebook.com/walkingtheunnamedpath. You know, we hope to hear, you know, what y'all thought. You know, if you have any suggestions for future shows, and hope you'll join us in a couple of weeks for our show on September 9th. Yes. For our 1-year anniversary show. Not exactly sure what we're going to do just yet, but whatever we do, it's going to be a great show. And yeah, have a great weekend, and we hope you'll be joining us again soon. Take care.
Coming this October to Northwest Georgia, it's Caldera Fest 2017. The biggest pagan music festival in the United States is back for its second year, featuring over 20 of the world's best in pagan music, including Spiral Dance, Tuar the Deer, Kelly Mays, Rowena of the Glen, Witch's Mark, Tricky Pixie, Kellyanna, David Woods, Kiva, and many more. 5 days of fun and festival in the Georgia Mountains, October 5th through to the 9th, 2017. Tickets are available now. www.calderafest.com.
You're listening to Pagans Tonight. Pagans unite on Pagans Tonight. Many paths, one network. For over 5 years, we've been the place to connect with the best, brightest, and most trusted voices in the pagan world. Every night is Pagans Tonight.